بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. There is some discussion as to when shirk had surfaced on this earth, whether it was before Nuh alayhi salam, in the time of Idris alayhi salam, or during the zamana of Nuh alayhi salam. But whatever the case, whether it was before Nuh alayhi salam or at the time of Nuh alayhi salam that shirk had surfaced on the earth, this hadith is clearly spelling it out. Shirk and takabbur, shirk and pride, they go together. Nuh alayhi salam is giving his last wasiyat, his last advice to his beloved children, and the two things that he prohibits them from is shirk, and number two is pride, arrogance. Today we read the ayat, إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَيَطْغَى أَنْ رَآهُ اسْتَغْنَى, that when man considers himself, when he finds himself to be self-sufficient, he's got abundance, then this abundance creates an attitude in him. إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَيَطْغَى أَنْ رَآهُ اسْتَغْنَى. When he sees himself quite sufficient, self-sufficient, this creates an attitude in him. See? So this pride and shirk, these are things that work together. They go together. And generally it is on account of pride that a person doesn't accept the truth, no matter what it is. But the pride has the better over him, and on account of that pride he is reluctant to accept the right. No matter how much you spell it to him, how much you prove it before him, that this is right, this is wrong, this is the truth and this is falsehood. But when a man has been overcome with pride, he's overcome with arrogance, then he's blocked the room, he's blocked the avenue and the road to good for himself. If I'm going to accept this, and I'm going to accept this correction, then what will be left of myself? What will people say of me? I won't have that image in society any longer. So on account of that pride and on account of that arrogance, he can't move forward. This is really, really dangerous. Today we spoke in the morning, in the afternoon we spoke about the two elements that the Sufiya Abu Sufyan al-Din had discovered that formed the basis for human disobedience. One is excessive love for wealth, and the other position. Position is pride. One is love for wealth, and the other, the love for position, recognition. I must be recognized. I must be acknowledged. People must know about me. Right? So these two are the elements that come as the blockage. They come as the obstacle. They come as the impediment in human progress, whether it's pride, whether it's wealth, pride or wealth. Any era of human history, if man had gone wrong, had gone off, it was one of these two things that came in the way. In the time of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, Hercules, Heracle, when he receives the letter of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, So he's convinced that this is the word of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Right, he's convinced. And he's talking to his selected people. But they make a big noise and he's afraid now that these people oppose him and he will lose the comfort and the happiness, the enjoyment, the luxury that he is in. See, so what comes on the way? It's that wealth and position. The luxury that he is in and the position that he's commanding. Now, up till this day, look at it, you know, in our, you know, in something that we can relate to. Imagine a big massive istima, right, with a million crowd, right, and in all the istimas, a certain person is considered as the Hazratji, he's the biggest person there, he's giving the main talks, main dua, musafa is being made with him, so he's the most recognized person, right? Now suddenly, that recognition is moved away from him to another person, and he has to show the respect to the next person. Is it an easy thing? All the time he was making a dua, people are asking him for dua. He's giving the main talks. He's giving the hidayat bayans. Right. So the whole focus is on him. And now suddenly for some reason that focus is being moved away from him to the next person. How does he take it? There was one Christian king, Jibilla bin Ayham. Right. He had accepted Islam around the time of Umar radiallahu ta'anhu, and he was making tawaf around the Kaaba Sharif. In the process of making tawaf, one villager, Bedouin, he tramped on his lungi, on the lungi of the king, Jibilla bin Ayham. He was a Christian king, and now he accepted Islam, he's making tawaf. Tawaf in Hajj, whatever it was. And this bird went and tramped on his lungi, and his lungi slipped a little bit. Perhaps some of his private part had just been uncovered. So he got naturally very upset, and he slapped the villager. So the villager lodged the complaint with Umar radiallahu anhu that this is what happened. Jibilla is summoned to the court. Umar radiallahu anhu hears the whole case. Jibilla is there and this Bedouin is lodging the complaint that this man had slapped me for no justifiable reason. So Umar says that Kitabullahi al-Qisas, the punishment of equality must prevail. So Jibilla says, and me, for a person as me as well, the same law, does it apply to a person as me in this position where I have got thousands and millions of subjects under me, massive empire like myself, massive throne, wealth, authority, and the law of equality, will it prevail over me as well? Umar radiallahu anhu says that there is no exception to the law. Law of equality, there is no exception. So then he asks, is there an alternative? Yes, the alternative is either the law of equality, you slapped him, he must slap you, or he must pardon, he forgives. But we cannot use any influence on him to forgive you. That is his prerogative. He wants to do it, he wants to forgive you and pardon you, that's his business. And if he wants to slap you, like how you have slapped him, he's got the right to do it. So he says, alright, can you give me some time to think over it, to think over my options, what options I have, and what should I prefer? So, all right, for 24 hours you can think about it. Tomorrow will have to come and report, this burden will come. And now that embarrassment is too much for him. The simple burden, the likes of who, there are millions in my country, and this person will come and slap me, who I rule over, I decide over the death and their life, and such a person now, he is going to come and slap me. That was too much for him. So the pride came on his way, and he's thinking about it at night, and that very night he and his people fled away and returned back to Christianity. Nonetheless, a delegation of Sahaba was moving in that very direction, and they thought, alright, we are going in that direction, let's see what's the position with the same Jabillah, what is his position. At the time they come there, now this man Jabillah is on his deathbed, on the throes of death. And then he's saying to this group of Sahaba Ikram that passed there, that alas, had I only swallowed the pride of mine on that day, and I could have received the slap of that burden and been blessed with the honor of Islam, than dying now with the disgrace of Christianity. I couldn't swallow my pride that day. On that day I couldn't humble myself, and that disgrace was too much for me. Had I only swallowed my pride that day and been honored with Islam, then that would have been far greater for me than dying with a disgrace. See, he himself understands disgrace of Christianity. Sahaba Ikram told him that it's never too late. If you still want to turn back to Islam, the road of acceptance is open to you, it's not closed. He thought for a while, and he feels to himself that how can I secure this? So he says, all right, I am prepared to accept Islam, but under condition that this rulership must not change. Sahaba says that is in its place. You will be entitled to rule over this territory. You accept Islam, you will have the first preference to rule over this. Second condition, Umar radiallahu ta'ala must give me his daughter in marriage. So this Sahabi says, that is Umar's discretion, it's not my discretion, it's his daughter. She wants to enter into your marriage, or withdraw and turn and reject that proposal, that's her prerogative. Anyway, this Jamaat has returned back to Medina Munawwara, and they gave a report, a kalguzari of what happened. And Umar says that you should have accepted the proposal on my behalf, what's there? But just then this Jubillah died. But he died in Christianity. But what I want to show you is, see what comes as an impediment. The thing that comes on the road of truth is this pride, this arrogance, excessive love for recognition and wealth, or excessive love for my position. People must recognize me, must understand me. Anyway, just turn the books of history, you'll find. If you just look at cursory glance, so many incidents replete. One najmi idha hawa. At the end of the surah, there is a sajda, right? So Rasulullah recited the surah, and everybody that was present there in Makkah Mukarramah, whoever had heard the recitation of this, he fell in sajda. Kafir, Muslim, everybody. But one kafir, the pride had the better over him. He scooped a handful of sand, and he did this. He said, Yakfini hadha, this is enough for me. So Ibn Mas'ud says that, فَرَأَيْتُهُ بَعْدَ ذَٰلِكَ مَاتَ كَافِرًا. After that I saw him die as a kafir. That day he knew it was the truth. But the pride was too much for him. I must now prostrate, I must fall down to the ground. So this was too much. And he couldn't bow down. When he couldn't bow down, this was the consequence, this was the end. That he died, and he died as a kafir. Right? Abu Jahl and company, they all were against Islam, right? All were against Islam. Now I have to speak this, I speak about this, explained earlier on as well. We are living in a Muslim minority, see, with kafir culture all around us. And kafir culture, it revolves around pride and arrogance. It revolves around immorality and extravagance. And because we are just 2 or 3%, so we begin to become influenced with their cultures, with their values. We don't realize that we belong to the house of Islam. And Islam talks about humility, of modesty, right? Simplicity. Islam talks for these values. And kufr talks for that values. So Abu Jahl and company, they all are on the way of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, directly conflicting against Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Whatever Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has to say, they come in opposition, in opposition. So this Abu Jahl and two other prominent kafirs, right? Rasulullah's Mubarak habit was he would recite the Quran Sharif at night, and the homes were very simple in that zamana, very, very simple, small homes. So his recitation could be heard outside the house. Now these kafirs would listen to the recitation of the Quran Sharif the entire night. They were so spellbound with the recitation of the Quran, they couldn't move. They hear the Quran and they're spellbound. They're just there. Can't move from that point. Now, at the early morning, Subah Sadiq, just after Seri time, you know. Now they feel to themselves that if we're going to remain here any longer, then we will be seen by our people. And they will object. They will say that you are against Muhammad. And you're working under, against him, but you are listening to his kalam. You are listening to his recitation. What's your problem? On the one end, you will say, Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is wrong. Don't listen to him. And he's like this, na'uzu billah, like this and like this. But then on the other end, you are listening to him. And the whole night is being spent in listening to the kalam that Nabi Sallam is reciting. So how do you reconcile? So before the break of morning, they would disperse and they would leave. But anyway, as they were leaving, then one spots the other. So they three agree amongst themselves that this is the first and the last. We are the leaders of the Quraysh. And if they ever spot us, then we'll be in the spot. If they ever see us, they'll be in the spotlight just now. So we must rather, you know, we must vow never to do such a thing again. Alright. The following night, they are drawn again. It's an attraction that they can't resist. And they come and listen to the Quran Sharif the entire night. And as the morning breaks, and then they're trying to leave, and one spots the other. So this person asked Abu Jahl, but Abu Jahl, I want to ask you, we one-on-one, right? There's no third person here. It's just myself and you. There's no third person. What is the truth? Is what Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam speaking about, is it true? Is it false? What is it? So Abu Jahl says that you see, we have got a family rivalry with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. We are one family and they are another family. We all come and meet up with the Quraysh. Right? But then we are different family and Muhammad Sassam Banu Hashim is a different family. And we have a history of a rivalry from the top. Right? These people, they said that they are the Khadim of the Haramain. Right? They will do the Khidmat of the Hajis and the Haram. So we said, we know we're inferior, we also do the khidmat. If you are taking care of the hajis with Zamzam, whatever it is, then we will also take do the khidmat. They say, well, we'll maintain the Kaaba Sharif. We also maintain the Kaaba Sharif. Right? So whatever they were doing, we were neck to neck with them. We were nowhere behind. Now suddenly one man, he gets up from amongst them and he says that I'm receiving divine inspiration. I'm being guided from the heavens. And this is not a thing that you can have a rivalry in, because this is the selection of God. You can't afford to have a rivalry in this. In other things we can have a rivalry. We can fight them, we can challenge them, right? But when the man is being chosen from above, from the heavens, then can we have a rivalry, can we have a fight against such a person? We can't. But now, if we give in, then we are defeated. If we give in, say, no, we accept you now. So, you have the upper hand and we are now under you, right? So, wallah, we will, as long as we live, we will challenge the man. We will fight against him. Now, again, the fight is for what? The fight is that, why are they superior and why are we inferior? Why have they got more? Why are they more recognized? Why are they more well known? And why are we not so well known? That same fight. That fight that started off from Shaitan. That this child here is born yesterday. And he's getting all the respect. And I am an old dada, man. I am living in the heavens here for years. I am an old dada here. I am the teacher of the malaika. And this man is born yesterday. And I need to now bow myself to him. Same story. Recognition. The power struggle. And you want to see it, then you see it now in the elections, don't you see it? Right. In any country, South Africa is not particularly South Africa. Any country for the matter, whether it's South Africa or anybody. But don't you see it at the time of election? That how they fight neck to neck, right? So the one person is afraid that this person is going to get into that post, right? He's going to become the prime minister. Now look at it. Just look at this case that happened in front of your eyes. For 3 or 4 years, man is afraid that this man is going to come in, right? For 3 or 4 years, he's afraid that this man is going to come into that seat. So he's putting all the hurdles in his way. The one hurdle he puts, no, this man can't be coming onto the seat because they were involved in some type of money problem, right? Arms deal, whatever it was. So he can't come because of this. Alright. That arms deal thing fell out. So now he still is not capable and worthy of the position, because he's got some bad history about some woman, etc. That case is out, one case after the other. One case, it takes 1 year, 2 years for the case to be investigated, debated, discussed, and then go to court and all that. So all that trauma, but for what? That man cannot see this person coming onto that seat. Right? That seat, why must he take it? Why must I be removed from the seat and why must this person come onto that seat? The fight is only for that, nothing else. Recognition, power, power, recognition, power, recognition. That's why the hadith says, فَنِعْمَ الْمُرْضِعَةُ وَبِئْسَةِ الْفَطِيمَةُ. Right? That when you're taking this position is such, you know, when you are moved on to a position now. You become now the king, you become the Hazratji now, right? You become the person that is most well recognized, right? Most respected. At that time, it's an excellent thing. Ni'matil murdiyatu, right? Wabi'satil fatimatu. But when you have to be weaned out of that position, then it's very difficult. Like the child has to be weaned out from its milk. How difficult it is, huh? So at the time that you are coming into the position, you're seeing a very rosy picture. But when you have to be weaned out, then it's very difficult. So these are the basic human problems. Basic human problems. on his wealth, on his position. And by the fazl of Allah Ta'ala, the khanqa, the mashayikh, they have understood that this is basic human quality, basic human weakness, where man goes down, where he fails in these two things. It's a challenge of wealth, it's a challenge of name. Challenge of wealth and challenge of name. And there man must fail. He must slip. There'll be a very selected few who can bypass this. But otherwise, most of the men, they will either slip in wealth or either slip with name. One of the two he must slip in. You know, we may talk about it, and as youngsters say, what's wrong? What's the big thing about wealth? What's the big thing about name, right? But as you progress in age, you begin to understand, all right, this is what name stands for, and this is what wealth stands for, right? And you can't see yourself being relinquished of that position. You can't. It's too difficult. It's something too difficult to swallow. Now for me, for my position, I must be relinquished. I must be moved out of my position. Though I'll get all the perks and all the benefits, but now I must be relinquished from my position. I can't see this thing. So that's why they have understood it, and they have spelled it out to us. The Quran Sharif is saying it very clearly. تِلْكَ الدَّارُ الْآخِرَةُ نَجْعَلُهَا لِلَّذِينَ لَا يُرِيدُونَ عُلُوًا فِي الْأَرْضِ. You are striving for Jannat. Then the Jannat is reserved for those people who are striving for a name in this world, a position in this world. See? Now the same problem again, it repeated itself with Fir'aun, then came to Qarun, the same thing happened there. Exactly the same thing. Now you look at this case, now case study of Qarun. He's the wealthiest person in the Bani Israel. The Quran Sharif speaks about his treasures. I don't think no person in human history after him had so much of wealth. So much of wealth he had, nobody in human history has so much of wealth. Imagine, just the keys of his treasures would lower the backs of strong bodied group of people. A strong body. Imagine 50, 60 people, and just the keys to his treasures were so heavy that they couldn't carry it, they couldn't manage carrying it. So can you imagine what treasures he had? Can you imagine what treasures he had? Now, with all this, he's got some type of power amongst the Bani Israel. From the side of Fir'aun, he's the governor over the Bani Israel, right? Number two is this, that he's got so much of wealth that he's the wealthiest amongst the Bani Israel. Number three, he's amongst a selected few who know the Torah off by heart, from cover to cover. The selected few knew it, and he was amongst those few that knew it. Right? Number four, he's coming from the very house of Nubuwwat. Kana min qawmi Musa. He was Musa's cousin brother. So he's coming from the very house of Nubuwwat. Right? Now he's got four things to his name, four things to his credit. He's the wealthiest, he's the governor, right? Then he is the few amongst those few people that who have the knowledge of the Torah. And number four, he's coming from the very house of Nubuwwat. Now, his complaint was that why do the rest of the Bani Israel, they identify with Musa and Harun, but they don't show me the respect that they show to Musa and Harun al-Islam. I don't receive that. I got the wealth. I got power. In the lineage, I know backwards, right? So why don't they show me the respect that they show him? Again, power struggle. You see that power struggle. And the power struggle puts him back. It puts him back. So what he does? The same thing that today's politicians do. Exactly the same thing. You'll be surprised how this whole political thing, how it works. Exactly the same thing that today's politicians do, right? What they did with Zuma, they tried to accuse him with some girl, right? So what Qarun did was exactly the same thing. He gave some couple of millions to one girl there, and he told his girl, he charawed her, he prepared her, he spurred her up, said, I'm giving you this money, what you must do? When Musa alayhi salam stands up, delivering his sermon to the Bani Israel, what you must do, you must stand up and charge him with a false accusation that Musa did this to me. Right, so she stood up. Now she's been given that millions. So, inko to kya chahe? Paise hi chahe, what they worried about name and respect and all. They don't mean, this type of woman, they're not worried about anything. She got the money, now she stood up and she charged Musa alayhi salam of some type of an illicit affair with herself. So Musa alayhi salam was naturally disturbed at this. And the reason why he's disturbed is now, with so much of difficulty, he got the Bani Israel right onto the track. Now, if the Banu Israel, if they have this weak opinion of me, that I had an illicit affair with this woman, right, then that dawat of mine, that tawheed, all that will go away. Everything will be washed out from them. They'll go back to kufr and shirk. So obviously Musa alayhi salam is upset about this. So this Musa alayhi salam, he says to this woman very firmly, I ask you in the name of Allah Ta'ala, who spurred you up like this? Now she got a shock when he took the name of Allah Ta'ala and he gave her a jolt, you know, that I ask you in the name of Allah Ta'ala, who spurred you up? Who put you up against me? So she says, it is Qarun that has put me up against you for so much of wealth, so many millions. Musa alayhi salam went into sajda straight away and he cursed Qarun. And the Quran Sharif says, فَخَسَفْنَا بِهِ وَبِدَارِهِ الْأَرْضِ. Then he caused the earth to swallow him. The hadith says, up to this day, he's being still swallowed into the very bottom of the earth. He's being swallowed right into the bottom of the earth, one way. Earth is just sucking him through. But where it started off, where it stemmed up at the same, this power struggle. So we think that this power struggle is a small thing. No, but it's a very dangerous, don't play with this game. Rather be Mr. Nobody, do some small work, carry on with your life, than going for this power, recognition, wealth, whichever way, there's a 1% of an element of doubt, I'm going for power, I'm going for some, whichever way, don't go that way. It's going to destroy you, it's going to ruin you, it's going to break you. I saw in India, that time I see, one person outwardly very pious, good alim, etc. And there's a power struggle going on, right? Have you seen this? A very capable, very, very capable person. You know, wonderful, excellent memory. The command that he's got on Arabic, the command that he's got on Uloom, on excellent. But now suddenly there's a vacancy and there's a power struggle. Right? And there is some discrepancy from his side. Right? There's a discrepancy from his side. And as a result of the discrepancy that was caused from his side, Allah Ta'ala put some afat, some musibat onto him. I seen all this whole thing carrying on, where that man was such a capable, such a great person, and then suddenly there was a failure in his memory. Such a respectable, such a top person, and suddenly his memory failed him, and now there's no respect left for the person. But where it stemmed from? Again, power. This power struggle. He saw a vacancy, he wanted that vacancy to get up there, there was a power struggle. And then in the process, this is what happened to him. Some discrepancy from his side, Allah Ta'ala sent an afat, and as a result, there was a loss of memory. I used to see the man, I used to feel pity for the person. But what else can you do? See? But do you see what happens? This power, the struggle for wealth and struggle for power. Simple thing is man tawadu alillah. Just humble yourself. هذا كريتيريا يثبت الله تعالى. هذا حكيم أختار صاب رحمة بركاتهم. He says, he quotes سيد سليمان ندوي صاب رحمة الله عليه. یا تو ایسے رہے یا تو ویسے رہے, وہاں دیکھنا ہے کہ کیسے رہے. Whatever people felt of us in this world, you know, whatever respect they showed us, oh, we are like this, we are this jamaat, and we are so the head of so and so, whatever it is. یا تو ویسے رہے, یا تو ایسے رہے, یا تو ویسے رہے. Wherever, however you wanted to stay, wherever you was, whatever position you had, وہاں دیکھنا ہے کہ کیسے رہے. The actual criteria is to see how you will fare by Allah Ta'ala. Here, the day will pass. People will talk about you. Alright, you are so, such a big person, such a big Mawlana, such a big position. So many people change their lives through you, etc. That everything will, all will talk. Lekin wahan dekhna hai kaise rahe. My Ustad, Hafiz Abdul Rahman Sahib, Rahmatullah Alayh, Hazrat Hakim Sahib asked him, that how many hafizes have you produced? So his answer was, that I will know when I am in the qabr. I can say I produce 1,000 hafizes, right? I can say that much. But the only merit will be when Allah Pak says that these are the 1,000 people that you have produced. I can keep on bragging about myself, 1,000 people I have produced hafizes. But if Allah Ta'ala also says that there are 1,000 people that I have produced, then it is worth something. Otherwise, kya fayda? I can keep talking about it, kya fayda? In the Arab, amongst Arabs, they have a person like a mashata. Mashata is a woman who prepares the bride. You know? They'll comb her, they'll dress her, and they'll apply some oils and all that to make her body nice and soft. Just before she can get into the bridal home, you know. So they'll prepare very well. Sometimes it takes about 6 months to prepare all the different ointments, the different foods, and the different makeup, and what have you, you know. It takes about 6-7 months to prepare her to get into the bridal home. Right? So after she's prepared her, and she's made her, she bought all the makeup, and the mehndi apa, and all that, everything was worked out, and she dressed her up, and, you know, she's at the best at the time. Now the mashata says to the bride, mashallah, you looking extremely beautiful, you know, you looking extremely excellent. So there's a tear that comes off the bride's eyes, and she says, kaash ke jis mard ke shadi mein main ja raha hoon, jis mard ke nikah mein main ja rahi hoon, uske zaban se ye nikal jaye کہ میں بہت ہی خوبصورت ہوں. You are applauding me, you are praising me, for whatever. But the man in whose life I'm entering, if only these words come out from his mouth, then it's everything. Otherwise, your praise, your applauding, and your recognition really doesn't mean anything. It may mean something to you, perhaps. It may mean something to you, but if that man has to say the same words, then it's everything. So we need to understand, it's a fine line, we need to understand that these people, they will praise today, tomorrow they will be against, today they for, tomorrow they against. Wahab dekhna hai, we really have to say, we have to look, you know, beyond us. We have to look beyond us, look towards Allah Ta'ala. That is Allah Ta'ala also approving this? Is Allah Ta'ala also endorsing this? Is He recognizing this? If He's recognized it, then, you know, everything is going well. But if he hasn't recognized it, so kya fayda? What is the benefit? What is the good? What is the good of that position? What is the good of that respect? What is the good of that recognition? So when we blind ourselves from this aspect, this is where all the systems begin to fail in us. The real merit, the real criteria, the real recognition comes from above. If he's accepted, everything is going well. And if he's rejected, then there's nothing. So this is the two things that we spoke about this afternoon. Wealth and position. Wealth and name. Wealth and name. Two things from the beginning of insan till the end of insan. These are the two things that he has to just work around. by Paria Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. He put it beautifully. He used to say, do the work of everybody and remain Mr. Nobody. What? Do the work of everybody or do the work of somebody but remain Mr. Nobody. Who did it? No, we don't know. Anyas syndrome. So syndrome, they have different, now there's syndromes they have. Anyas syndrome, Anyas, we don't know what happened. It happened, but we don't know who did it, what happened. We don't know. Someone did it, we don't know who did it. Angya syndrome, that's the safest syndrome. Mufti Shafi Sahib Rahmatullah says of our Kabir, they had all these things in their lives. He says that he was at the station in Thanabon one night, late at night, 10 o'clock. India, the time that we were studying in Dioban also, was about the same. Late at night, you go to the railway station, no light at all, absolute dark. That one coolie will have one scrunchy torch or something and he's showing the road. You can't see a single thing, you can't see. No light. Yeah, one day there's no light, there's so much of panic, you know. Hundreds of generators, they're ordering from here, there, everywhere. There you're living in darkness. Really, literally you're living in darkness. So there's absolute no lights. And now one family has just come into the Thanabhuvan station. There used to be a station there at that time, you know. They came there and they were big trunks late at night, 11 o'clock. Man jumps onto the platform and he's saying, Kuli, Kuli, Kuli. Kuli doesn't mean you're Indian, eh? Right. Kuli is a porter, right? In Urdu, Kuli is a porter. So he's not getting any response. Mufti Shafi Sahib Rahmatullah, now he is the head mufti. Imagine he is the head mufti at that time of the whole India. All are recognizing his fatwas. So what position he's got, what respect he's got. Now he understood the problem. That these people want a porter to carry the goods to the home. And there's no porter around. Now, Mufti Shafi Sahib, any of you have seen him, he was a thin person. Like his parak or something like that, you know. Thin, not a big hefty person. So what he did is, he had his shawl or something, he took his shawl and he tied it around his head, like how the porters would do. He tied it around his head and he went in the direction of that person saying, Kuli. Say, yeah, Kuli, Kuli, Kuli. He said, oh, Kuli, you're here. All right, yeah. These trunks, all right. He took one trunk and put it on his head. Now, the man never do this type of job all his life. Suddenly now, he felt sorry for these people here and he threw the trunk, put it on his head. One suitcase in his right hand, one suitcase in his left hand. Now that Zalim is saying, "Bhai, there's another fourth suitcase as well, take it and double it up." So Mustafa said, "Bhai, I got three as it is. You people are empty, at least take this one suitcase." Somehow he managed to convince them, they took that fourth suitcase. He took these three suitcases, one on his head, one in the right hand, one in the left hand. At the time, Kuli, move it up, right, left, they give the direction. So he is following them. The house came and he left those trunks and he took a U-turn and he ran away. He moved away. Because the house came now, if they see him in the light, they'll know who this person is. So he moved away. The following morning, that man came to the Khanqa and he's giving a whole report of what happened the previous night. Say, you know what, we were in a problem last night. Allah Pak sent one Farishta. And the Farishta brought our goods. He disappeared after, he didn't even take a fee on it. This was that Farishta. Understand? So these people did the work of everybody, but they remained Mr. Nobody. And Mufti Shafi Sahib Rahmatullah said, I didn't need to mention this incident. But what happened was, once in his house, now he had newly moved on to Karachi, you see. So, now he's new there, and the wife kept on complaining to him, that I'm trying the children to do this work here, do this work here, do this work. But now, ek dusre ke upar talta hai. One son says, no, you tell him, now you always tell, any job you're just telling me. How the children will tell the mother. Any work, you can only find me. I'm the only person you can see, you can't see anybody else. You're blind to everybody else, so I'm the only person. Why don't you tell him? Anything, just tell him. Tell me, only tell me. Can't tell others. So Mustafa Rahman says that I kept the secret all the time. I kept the secret. Today, under constraints, I'm explaining to you that this is what I did. Right? The second incident, he says, you see, Mr. Nobody. Eh? The second incident, he says, that he is leaving early, just as the Azan. In India, Fajr Azan, right throughout the year, goes at Subh Sadiq. Here, only Ramzan time, Subh Sadiq time, you're giving Azan. But their whole year round, they give Fajr Azan at Subh Sadiq. So, Azan time, and he just left the house. On the distance, he's hearing the groaning of an old woman, you see. So he goes to the distance, he sees an old woman, she just pulled the water out of the well. Big, big bucket of water, and she's got difficulty balancing that water. So, now this woman, now she's amongst the very poor people. Like how you have these untouchables and all, poor people, downtrodden. So he says, auntie, you got a problem with this water? I said, yeah. So he took the water onto his head. Now imagine he is the man that is the most respected here in the whole of Deoband. Deoband is not a small place, it's the whole it's like a university for the whole of India. So he took the water on his head and he says, auntie, where you want to go? So she's directing him and he left it. So he says, as I left, for a good 100, 200 meters, I could hear this lady making dua for me, you know. Allah must make you like this, and Allah give you this, and Allah give you this. So I thought to myself, hey, you thought bara sasta soda, this is a very cheap bargain, man. Making so much of duas at such a precious time from this widowed woman here, I must go for it every day. And for a good few months until that woman was alive, he would go to the house early in the morning and draw the water out of the well, deliver it into the house, take the lady's duas and go home. Now this is that what he is called. Be Mr. Nobody and do the work of everybody. But then when we fight for position, fight for, you know, then everything goes, everything. I want recognition, you want recognition, everybody wants recognition. So then recognition becomes the thing and khidmat goes away. Right? But when we are striving for work, then there will be a lot of work. You know this Mr. Ahmad Didat, they used to have that IPCI. Before that, it was Arabic studies. When we were children, we used to have that IPC, Arabic study circle. Then, this thing IPCI came up. So, my uncle was a secretary there in that office that time, when it was that Arabic study circle. So, there was one frame there, and the frame read that there is no limit to what a man can achieve provided he is not bothered who takes the credit. What? There is no limit to what a man can achieve, provided he is not bothered who takes the credit. Now, what is the fight after? The fight is after this credit. And despite the fact that the government put the Credit Act on now, then to get credit. So, there's no limit. You can do tons of work. You know, asman ki asman ka kaam khidmat kar sakte ho, but don't fight for credit. Credit is there by Allah Ta'ala. By Him, if the credit is safe, is secure, sab kuch mil gaya. And if everybody recognized you, they praised you, they spoke about you, oh, you did this. Ismail Hussain did this, and he raised so much, and mashallah, what a good reciter, and Qari sahab, and Mawlana sahab, and everything. But khuda ki ya sifar hai, to kya fayda? Everybody spoke so good. And so in Deoband, I used to see, you know, when we were studying there, I used to see the senior ulama teaching hadith and all, big hadith kitabs and all that. I used to see that they going to the bazaar with their own hands, they're doing their own shopping. Give me 50 cents of salt, 10 cents of dhania, 5 cents of fudina. All that greens, all the small things, they're buying with their own hands. And they got their parcels in their hands, one plastic bag here, one plastic here. In the meanwhile, you see them in the madrasa, hey, this is a top mullahs, man. They take this hadith here, they take that hadith. And big classes that are teaching, half of them are already mullahs. They come to learn again, you know. already Mawlana, and they are teaching them. But in a personal capacity, they are so simple. Right? So that's why I say we are living in a kuffar majority. So this kuffar mentality and culture is rubbing on to us. We need to understand that we belong to the house of Islam, the house of simplicity, modesty, morality, respect, that we will do the good and we will pass on the credit to others. We will do the good, and when it comes to time to the time for credit, we pass it on to others. Or he did it, that person did it, that person. Don't take the credit yourself. You do the good, but pass on the credit to others. Then this ummah will thrive. But now I want the credit to come to my side. Whatever happens, but the credit must come on my side. Then it can never work. So the spirit that we were supposed to be working with, we do the good and pass on the credit to others. No, he did it, his du'as, or that person's effort, his sincerity, his sacrifice, and that made it possible. Others' minds, what good am I? These people did the hard work. It's my name that they have been using, but otherwise they did the good work. So this is how this ummah thrives. It gains prosperity, it grows. Allah Ta'ala grant us that tawfiq, that we begin to recognize what that this power of the struggle for wealth, struggle for name, that we begin to realize what a dangerous thing it is, what a destruction it is, how it destroys. It destroyed people in the past. We are seeing the destruction it's causing today here amongst non-Muslims and amongst Muslims, our own people, and how what a destructive element, wealth and name, wealth and name. If you can just forget this thing here, leave it, do the work, and forget the name. Hazrat Imam Masihullah Sahib used to say, Neki kar aur darya mein phenk. Neki kar aur darya mein phenk. Do the good and forget about it. Don't even talk about it. Allah Pak knows about it is enough. Allah Pak knows about it is enough.